It is week 46 of the year 2020, and this is Father Roderick to the Max. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Father Roderick to the Max, and I'm happy to tell you that I'm already feeling a little bit better than last week. It is gradually improving. I have more good days than bad days, and even the bad days are not as bad as they used to be. It's a little bit still unpredictable. There are moments that I really lack energy and that I have to sleep. Like the other day, I went to take a nap after lunch for what I thought was going to be 20 minutes, turned out to be 2.5 hours. I woke up like, what time is it? Where am I? What day is it? And the day was over. So sometimes I still feel like I'm not there yet, but I'm already able to do so much more than I was 2 weeks ago. So I'm just looking at the bright side, at the half full glass instead of the half empty glass, even though my glass is not full yet. I got a ton of things to talk about in this show, but before I start, let me first again thank you for your support. And if you are a new patron and you've just joined the community, welcome. I'm so glad that you are now part of this vibrant community. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to check out the Discord server. This past week, I haven't been really much present in that community, but that is a very, very cool place to hang out. Especially the kitchen section is so vibrant and active. And hopefully I will see you there soon as well to chat a little bit. Speaking of the kitchen, that's where we are going at the beginning of this show, as always. This is the place where I share with you my favorite recipes and my failures in the kitchen. Well, this past week, I've started to prepare winter food, Dutch winter food. I've talked a lot about pasta and Oriental or Asian dishes, which is kind of what I like eating and cooking the most. But there are days, especially when it's cold, like yesterday, I was out filming an entire day. Was it yesterday? Was the day before yesterday already? Time flies. I was in the southwest of the country, near the sea. It was a bright day, but also really cold, especially in the evening. And when it gets cold like that, I crave winter food. And so today I'm going to give you the very simple recipe for endives and mashed potatoes. That sounds really gruesome, but it is actually quite nice. With bacon rashers and gravy. Now, I've been told that rashers is actually a British word. I couldn't find the American word for that. It's like street bacon, but it's super thick. It's like half an inch or something like that. It's much thicker than regular bacon that you would put with an omelet or something like that. So maybe people in the chat room know the American term for it. I Googled it and it said bacon rashers and gravy. Very important. So this is how you make it. You make mashed potatoes, right? That is simple. You have to get the right type of potato. Not all of them will mash equally well. There are some potatoes that are more firm. It could also, well, if you have the wrong kind of potato, you can always cook it a little bit longer. It will ultimately start to fall apart. But the best thing is to get these potatoes that are specifically grown for, you know, mashes. And they're a little bit more, I don't know, it must be a certain, I don't know, what makes it fall apart easier, but that's what it does. What I do is I cut the potatoes into smaller pieces, put them in salted water. I also leave the skin on. You just wash the potato. The skin is actually where most of the vitamins are. It's according to Steve, it is called thick bacon. Okay, well, that works for me. That's what it is, basically. You make mashed potatoes. I always salt the water. There are some people that are adamant about not putting any salt in the water for some reason. I guess they just like the contrast between the very salty bacon and then the non-salted endives and mashed potatoes. But I prefer, frankly, the salted variant. So I salt the water, cooked potatoes. And then you drain the water. I always keep a little bit of the water for later on, if I, and it's the same technique as with pasta, where you always keep at least a few spoons of the pasta water in case you need to dilute the sauce. So once the potatoes are ready to be mashed, that's where you add the raw endives. So you don't cook them. Endives are very cheap in my country. I just buy them pre-cut and already washed because I just don't want to waste my time with that sort of stuff in the kitchen. And what happens is once the potatoes have to be steaming hot, I just put in a few handfuls of endives in the pan. You need to have a slightly bigger pan than just for the potato, than you would need just for the potatoes, because the endives, of course, still contain a lot of water and air. But once you mash them into the potatoes themselves, and we've got a specific instrument for that. It looks like a grilling iron or something like that. I've not seen it anywhere else in the world, but we like our mashed potatoes. So, but you can also use a fork or whatever works for mashed potatoes. But once you start mixing them, the endives will actually reduce. It's like spinach. Raw spinach, when you cook that, all of a sudden, that huge pile of spinach is just a little bit in a pan. The same is true for endives, even though in this case, you're not really cooking them like you would do with spinach. But they will reduce in size. But the thing is, it needs to be raw. That gives it a little crunch, and it works so well in combination with these cooked potatoes. And then at the same time, or before, while you're cooking the potatoes, you put some oil in the pan, put the bacon in. Don't heat it up too much because then the bacon will start to burn, but you want the fat to melt. And that is how you get this base for the gravy. And so I usually take two pieces of thick bacon and I put it on a medium fire until the fat starts to sizzle. And I don't cover the pan, because if you don't cover the pan, then the bacon itself will get a little bit crispier. And that is, again, this is just as much about the taste as it is about the what you call mouth feeling, or the way it just crunches. The combination of this warm potato mash with the raw endives that are mixed in. And the endives, by the way, are just very small slices of endives. Of course, you don't want to put in whole leaves because then you can't really mix it. That what I also add, and this, of course, is not really calorie prudent, I take some smaller pieces of bacon and I bake them first until they're nice and crunchy, and I mix that together with a little bit of the fat through the mash, and it gives it this extra punch. It's so good. But you can also keep it vegetarian. You can't really have vegetarian bacon. But anyway, these bacon slices, you make them crispy. Definitely don't throw away the fat because you need that for the gravy. And the gravy, to me, is essential to this winter food. So you take out the slices of bacon. You know how to make gravy, right? You keep the fat and the little bits and pieces that are so good, you know, the little fried stuff that fell off the bacon itself. I usually take a bit of potato starch, add some cold water, make a bit of a mix, add it to the sauce, heat it up, add pepper and salt, maybe even some garlic powder or whatever. You can basically go wild on that. What you can also do is fry some onions first, some chopped onion, mix that through the sauce. Just go wild, try it out. Everything works. You can also have it's fried onion and it's dried. It's a staple ingredient for Indonesian cuisine. You can get whole bags here at the supermarket, and you can also mix those through the sauce, and it just that even that adds crunch to the whole thing. And then it's basically put the mashed endives plus potatoes on the plate, add the bacon on top and then gravy all over the place. And oh, I just ate it before I started recording my podcast, and it was so good. Now, I can only eat this like once a week, because sometimes I make too much, and then for 3 days I'm eating mashed potatoes and I start craving pasta. But especially on wintry days when it's really cold, this is such comfort food for me. I love it. I would love to hear your recipes for mashed food. I'm pretty sure that in some, at least parts of the United States, they also have their own traditions when it comes to winter food. This could be another nice conversation starter on the Discord server. Just go to the kitchen and let me know what you eat during winter times. And this is what I learned on the internet. I have to say, I'm discovering so much through TikTok. I now watch it every day because the algorithm is so good and I'm getting so much quality content. Every once in a while, there's a silly dance or stuff that I'm not interested in. But then even if I swipe that away, the algorithm will learn. And so TikTok is only getting better the more I use it. And I'm having a few areas of interest where this is turning out to be an even better source for learning than YouTube. And it's psychology. I follow quite a few of these therapists and psychologists. And they, because TikTok is so condensed, so compact, you get a lot of information in very little time. And it's really, there are a lot of these videos that make me think and are frankly inspiring. I also follow a lot of cooks and amateur cooks. So I'm learning a lot about food and recipes. There's some excellent stuff about Italian cuisine on there as well. And I follow a lot of techies, you know, people that show you tricks and tips. And it's usually in the form of, I'm going to give you 5 websites that you wish you had discovered earlier, or 5 apps, free apps to enhance your productivity, or 10 amazing things you can do with your iPad. And that is what I wanted to talk about today. I discovered 2 things about my new iPad, which is right here. I love it. It is humongous. This 12.9 is much bigger than I thought it would be. It is a fingerprint magnet. And there is one other thing that it drives me nuts, and that is the Face ID. So it unlocks not with my fingerprint, but by looking at my face. And the thing is, the camera is on the top of the screen, but I always hold the iPad horizontally because that's how I like to read my comics and my websites. And watch YouTube and stuff. So I rarely have it in the vertical position, but if I hold it horizontally, then oftentimes my thumb will be on the camera. Another thing that annoys me to great extent is that the Face ID doesn't work when it's dark. And I always use my iPad to read in bed. And oftentimes it will not unlock, and then I have to type in the code, and I'm not a fan of the Face ID, but maybe it works for some people. All the rest is amazing about this iPad, the least of which is the fact that it runs a newer version of iPad OS compared to my previous iPad, which was at one point abandoned by Apple. So I have like the latest version for that type of iPad, but I kind of skipped at least 2 years of newer versions of the iPad OS. And I have to say that I'm pretty impressed with these newer editions and what it can do. One of the things that I liked about iOS in general was that it offered these accessibility features. So you can set, for instance, your device to black and white, which is great to do for Lent. And only for Lent. But also, there was on my previous iPad this function where it could read pages, it could read websites, which was useful, or is useful, because I often times want to consume information while I'm doing something else, cooking or cleaning the bathroom or whatever. The downside was, even though the software was there, it didn't work that well. So it would, for instance, read the entire website, like menu, entry one, information, contact form, about us, date, Saturday, 5/5. And then it would read all the text for the advertisements, and then it would start to read the article itself. Plus, if I would turn off the screen, which I do a lot because I don't need the screen when it's reading to me, it would also stop the narration. Well, it turns out that on the newer versions of iOS, they hugely improved that functionality. And so now I have this button, and it's slightly transparent. It's on the left, and it can read anything on the screen, and it reads it in multiple languages. You can download even higher quality languages. So the new Siri voice, the improved voice, is amazing. It's unfortunately not installed as a standard, so it has the kind of slightly robotic voice, the old Siri, but you can download the newer Siri voice, and it's probably because it takes up a lot of space. Like, the voice is like a half a gigabyte, which is quite a bit if you consider this iPad only has 64 gigs. But the quality of the narration is really fantastic. So let me see if I can give you an example of this. Can I log? Also, the LastPass stuff works so much better on this iPad than it did on the previous one. The previous one didn't even have fingerprint recognition, so you always had to type in the password before it started to work. And I don't know, it's much better integrated than I've ever experienced. So I want to go to my I'm just going to my Goodreads page, because there's usually a lot of text there, and I want to go to the book that I reviewed on my latest show, and I would like to play this review, this very negative review of the Chekhov short stories that I talked about. And so I've got the text here on my iPad, but say I don't have time to read it from the screen, I just want to listen to it. I press this semi-transparent button, and then it shows, it actually shows Google News, but I don't want to. So I can press this icon of the finger and click on this.
An Avenger. A betrayed husband plans to murder his wife and lover. He enters a store to purchase a gun. But, alas, there are so many choices. Boys. Two young boys want to leave their homes to try gold digging in California.
This is a summary of the short stories.
Exactly, fail safe. Plan may be an overstatement. The huntsman, a game hunter, and his estranged wife accidentally meet on a road. After 12 years of arranged marriage, the truth finally comes up. The truth is boring. The lady with the dog, a married misogynistic
et cetera,
man,
et cetera,
falls in love with another married woman.
Can I stop this? I don't know how to
they
stop this.
That's it. Missouri, a saddened carriage. Audiobook. An Avenger, a betrayed husband.
Okay, I can't stop this. How do I stop this thing? Oh, now it doesn't stop anymore.
Alas, there are so many choices.
Wait.
Boys, two young boys want to leave
no,
their homes.
No, you've already read that. Stop. Oh, there it is. Okay, I couldn't find the stop. A way to stop it. And I'm not sure if this works together with Siri, which is another thing that this iPad can do with my previous one, and also my iPhone couldn't do. It's always on. So I can just say, hey, Siri. And now it's listening. Set a timer for 1 hour.
Your timer is set for 1 hour.
Hey, Siri. Cancel that. Is it going to cancel it?
I stopped the timer.
You see, I like it that, and this is just like Google. Like, I've got multiple Google Homes and Google Minis, etc. And I'm so used to just do the Captain Picard thing, you know, just give commands and then it will reply. Now, finally, my iPad can also do that. And I love it. So this is a game changer. Also, when I turn off the screen, it will continue to read. It's not perfect. And the reading itself is not as good as Alexa. Alexa is absolutely fantastic. I use it all the time, especially to read new acquisitions on the Kindle store. It can read any book, and it's just the app. I actually, it works better on iOS, on this version of iOS, than it does on my phone, for instance, where it would sometimes completely repeat an entire chapter. But here it works really well. So I guess also on the older Apple devices, the app that I'm using is the last version for that iOS, but it hasn't updated the app anymore, so the bugs are still there. But it works fine here. And the reading voice, sometimes I'm just forgetting that I'm not listening to an Audible book read by a human being because it's so good. Unfortunately, there's only one voice, so it's a female narration, but it's so good. I don't know how Amazon does this because it has all the inflections and intonation. Here with Apple, you can still hear that it's not really understanding what it's reading. And so sometimes the intonation, and it depends on the voice. Some of the voices are better at doing the inflections and everything. But a lot of the voices kind of sound off. And for instance, they don't, you could even hear this in this example that I just played. It doesn't stop between sections. It just continues to read as if there's this ongoing text, whereas you just and the Kindle and Alexa do that so well. It's almost as if there was a real person reading it. It's amazing. I can listen to an entire audiobook, and it's only sometimes with certain words or specific vocabulary that it messes up, and you're just like, oh yeah, of course it's a it's not a real voice. But it's incredible how far this this technology has come. Pat has a tip for the face ID and says you just have to train it again in the dark as a second face ID. I'll try that out. I didn't think of that. I was like, I just did it, the face ID set up once, and that was it. I didn't even know that you could train it. But and it may also be because when I'm in bed without makeup and hair, I'm totally unrecognizable anymore. No, I don't know what's going on. Maybe also because I'm wearing reading glasses in bed. Maybe that's messing up the face ID, or it's just very dark in my bedroom. And then we've got some advice for winter food. Deer stew. Chili. Okay, I need those recipes. And I need a deer because I don't have any. So anyway, that is the one. That's the first thing that I've discovered. And this was thanks to a TikTok clip. I was browsing through my TikTok videos. All of a sudden, there's this girl. And she's like, I've discovered the most amazing functionality. Go to accessibility. Explains it in 1 minute. And I was like, oh, I didn't know my iPad could do that. The second thing that I wanted to talk about is it's my very first AR app. I don't think I could run these on my other Apple devices, but on this new iPad, and this is not even the newest iPad. This is the 2018. So right now it's not even recognizing my face. Okay. My previous iPad was about 5-6 years old, so it couldn't do AR. This new one, it's from 2018, so it doesn't have the LiDAR scanner or whatever it is, but it still does AR. And I downloaded, again, I saw this on TikTok. I was like, oh, this is awesome. It's called Apollo's Moonshot AR. And it's such a cool app. And of course, I love my space. Wait a minute. I got to see what I'm showing you. So this is what the app looks like. I'm telling this to my live audience that's watching the video. It has multiple entries about the landing on the moon, and some of these are actually AR. The clicking is actually from the app itself. And it is fantastic. Like, let's go to the moon. This is an AR app. I click it, and then it has this red button. And now it's loading. It says, warning, you got to clear the floor. But anyway, it looks at through the camera and move your device to scan the flat surface. So it's looking for a flat surface, which of course it can't find, unless, let me just get this out. This is a Star Wars model kit. Let me just point this at the table, and I say, oh yeah, just put the rocket right there. And it puts it in AR. Oh, wait a minute, I wasn't showing the camera, but look, I've got the Apollo 11 rocket. I'm trying to show this to the camera. I can't. Oh, man. Anyway, and it's right there on my table. Oh, well, you'll have to try it yourself. But the cool thing is, it's interactive. So I can just do the countdown. And now Apollo 11 is going to the moon. And it's launched right here from my podcasting desk. And here it goes. 2, 1, liftoff. And there it goes. And you can just turn it up and follow it, and you can move around it because, of course, it's completely AR. You can still see the launch pad and the launch tower, and you can get up close and see all the details. It's fantastic. I mean, I was like, wow. I didn't know my iPad could do this. It's so cool. Another version of, or another part of this app is it shows you the spacesuit, and you project it. It's right there in your room. You can walk around it, and it has these entries you can click, and it tells you. I was like, wow! I had no idea that AR was this good. Now imagine this with glasses and in 3D. Mind-blowing. Another part of this app is you have to land on the moon. And you for instance, you position a piece of the surface of the moon on your desk, and then you have to use your iPad to use the thrusters to land your moon lander safely. Yeah, I failed at that. I killed quite a few astronauts. It's so hard, but man, it's so much fun. So I can definitely see this becoming huge in the future. But of course, the downside is you got to use this big tablet to see it. And you could use a phone as well. The iPhone also has AR abilities, but the screen is so small that it doesn't have the same impact as with this big iPad. And when I saw this big, you know, astronaut suit in my room, I was like, whoa, the big screen definitely helps, kind of sells the realism of it. But this needs AR glasses. And I think Apple this is going to be the one more thing of 2021. Just hoping. Pat says, the longer you train the Face ID, the better it gets. I did not know. But Harry says, I did not even realize that there was AR on the iPad. It is, and this is just the one app that I've discovered. I'm sure there are many more. I would love to try out the Lego AR. There are some apps that work in conjunction with Lego sets. And I've got a few of those sets that have actually this AR functionality. I need to try it out. I tried it out on my Android phone, but again, the screen was very small, so it didn't have... I don't know. It wasn't really impressive, but maybe on the iPad it looks a lot better. So that was what I wanted to share with you about my new iPad. I think, and this is what I discovered on the internet. It is time to talk about Catholic liturgy. In this segment, I want to introduce you into the wonders of Catholic liturgy and also the details and the intricacies that you may not even know about if you're just going to church on Sunday. Well, today I'm going to talk about something that a lot of churchgoers are familiar with, and that is the books that we use in Catholic liturgy. That's one of the things that I love about Catholic liturgy is we don't make it up as we go. This is very different from the shows that you will see from certain evangelical churches, or where everything seems to be just the personal taste of the pastor or that particular church community or the choir. A lot of the Catholic liturgy is regulated by rubrics, and they are the same wherever you go in the world. And that is, to me, one of the appeals of Catholic liturgy. When I stream my international mass every Sunday, I've got people from all over the world participating in that and praying along. And they all hopefully feel more or less at home because it is similar to the mass that they are used to. And a lot of the elements that you see are the same in French, in English, in German, in Italian, in Spanish. Of course, the language is different. But even though you may not always be able to understand every part of the Mass because of all these different languages, you can still follow what's going on because of the rubrics. And it makes for a universal language in a certain way. And it also gives the Mass its accessibility. You always know where you are in Catholic liturgy. And these rubrics themselves are written down in one of the three books that we use in Catholic liturgy. And that one is the Missal. It is the Roman Missal, contains all the texts of the Mass, but also in a different color, in red, the rubrics. So it tells you what to do. And the easiest way to remember how to celebrate Mass for a priest is read the black and do the red. So the red describes, for instance, during the Eucharistic prayer. Let's say if you've got Eucharistic prayer number one, which is a translation from Latin of the original Eucharistic prayer before the liturgical reform in the 60s and 70s, which was the only Eucharistic prayer that was used for a few centuries. There are certain gestures that you have to make during the prayer of that Eucharistic prayer. For instance, at one point you have to bow down, you have to make the sign of the cross, etc., etc. There's also the imposition of the hands for the epiclesis, which is in a different location from the other Eucharistic prayers. All that is that's all written in red, and it shows you, any priest, even the least experienced one, even if you've just been ordained, if you just do the red and read the black, you can't go wrong. Well, believe me, you can still go wrong, and you can still mess it up. And sometimes, especially because for the International Mass, I don't have missals in all these different languages. I wouldn't be able to afford them. And I once had an English missal, but then they changed the translation, so I could throw it away. It was expensive, so I never bought a new one. Plus, these missals are they're basically meant for people in church, so they're pretty small. And if you open them on the altar, oftentimes the pages will fold back, and it's a hassle. And I'm certainly not going to buy the bigger ones that they use, that the priests use in these countries. Instead, I use the iPad. I was using my old iPad for Mass, and that was one of the reasons I was really looking forward to getting a bigger iPad, because my eyes aren't getting better with the years, and it's much easier to read. Even I noticed this also with the breviary. It's much easier on the eyes to have this bigger screen. So, but of course, you have to scroll. There are no pages on the app that I use for Mass. And so sometimes you're like, scroll, especially the first Eucharistic prayer has a lot of these different paragraphs that you can use for certain times of the year, Christmas time and Easter. But all that is included in the text. So sometimes it's like, okay, so where does my text continue? I keep scrolling, and it's a little bit embarrassing. But that's only one book that we use in Catholic liturgy. There are two more important books that we use. The second one is the Liturgy of the Hours. This is not used by everyone, but for people that are ordained. But it's actually something that anyone could use if they wanted to. It's the Liturgy of the Hours, which contains the Psalms, contains readings from the Bible, and prayers throughout the day. There are 5-6 times a day that you can pray the Liturgy of the Hours, and it is a great way to compartmentalize the day and making sure that it's the rhythm of prayer is part of every single day. And then, of course, all these texts change throughout the liturgical year. So that's the, and both the Roman, the Breviary and the Roman Missal are, I would say, 90% texts from the Bible. So the criticism that you sometimes get from people from the Protestant corner of the galaxy is, oh, the Catholics never read the Bible. They've all got their own Catholic books with Catholic stuff in it. We read the Bible. I was like, you have no idea. Like, almost everything in Catholic Mass, every single phrase that is uttered, every prayer, is usually derived from the Bible and is based on, even on biblical translations. There are so many. The Bible is so important in Catholic liturgy. Without the Bible, you would have nothing to say. So anyway, and the third book that is used is the gospel book, or the book of gospels, basically now there is a lectionary which contains all the biblical readings and the psalms that we use in liturgy, but for the gospel we use, if it's available, a separate book, which is called the Book of Gospels, the Evangeliarium in Latin. I'm not sure what the Evangeliary? I think that's the English term. I'm not sure. Anyway, it just contains the four Gospels. And, of course, it's using the parts of the Gospel that are read for Sunday Mass. And the gospel, the Book of Gospels, is usually a beautiful book because it is also a symbol of Christ and the Word that has lived among us. And so that book is venerated with a kiss, just like the altar is venerated with a kiss. It is also placed in a special place. It could be a special stand or the altar itself, which also is a symbol of Christ. And so that book has a special place in Catholic liturgy. It's also the book that you hold up. The bishop can use the Book of Gospels to bless the people after the gospel is read. So there are some rituals connected to the book. And of course, the Christianity is a religion of the book. And the book itself is a symbol of the revelation of something that we don't make up our own faith. It is handed over to us. It is revealed to us. It is transmitted throughout the ages to us. And it's written down. And so there is something in the written word that is stable, that is not dependent on the opinion or the taste of this or that pastor of community. And so in that respect, the function of these books in Catholic liturgy is, I think, essential to the universality of liturgical language. It reflects the fact that no matter where you are in the world and what language you speak, there's always something that you can recognize because it is shared by Catholics all over the world. All right, now you know everything about the three most important books in Catholic liturgy. As a rabbit hole, I wanted to briefly play a video that I found the other day. Speaking about languages, one of the things I love when I'm in Rome, I want to go back to Rome. I can't because of COVID. I've not been to Rome for a year. Oh, I'm missing that beautiful city so much. What I love, once I will be in Rome again, let's keep hoping, to hear all these different languages. And especially when I was studying in Rome and Pope John Paul II was still alive, he would, at Easter and Christmas, always have all these greetings in different languages. And it was so empowering to hear the pontiff speak to all these different parts of the world. And John Paul II had a knack for languages. Pope Benedict's a little bit less, even though his French, his German is incredibly good. No, he speaks German. It's a native language, but his Italian and his French and his Spanish really, really good. Had a strong German accent, but just the vocabulary, the grammar, fantastic. The current Pope, Pope Francis, is very limited when it comes to languages. He speaks Spanish, a little bit of French, Italian, tiny bit of English, and a bit of German, so I've been told, and that's about it. And he doesn't even really try to speak any other language because he knows it's not going to be good. But it's always been interesting for me that some people have an ear for languages and can I think I inherited some of that ability to emulate certain languages from my father and from my grandfather, my mother's father. So my grandfather was really good at languages, and my dad also was pretty good speaking multiple languages. His English was pretty bad, but his French was fantastic. So when I speak French, it usually sounds pretty convincing. Italian, I can fake it. My German, if I read it, I can get, it's reasonable. English has become better over time. And the way I speak now is also thanks to podcasting. I think during the day I speak more English and I listen to more to English than to my native language. So I'm pretty comfortable in all those languages. And I try, of course, you can never really totally hide the fact that you're not a native speaker, but I'm trying to improve as much as I can. And in French, I'm getting quite close to native speakers. Usually people can't really tell that I'm Dutch. They hear that they're always wondering from where in France are you coming from? Some people immediately detect that I've studied in Belgium because they will hear this Belgian French, influence. But most people are just like, I don't know, where are you from? It's funny. But I found this video on boingboing.net of all places, where there's this guy who is demonstrating what languages sound like to non-speakers. So what French sounds like to someone who does not know a word of French. But he does have for so many languages, and it is so good. I just want to play part of this video because I've never seen something like this before. It's fantastic. So his name is Diego Rivas. And he gives a tour of English, Arabic, French, Spanish, and some other languages. He even does, British English, American English. But it's all gobbledygook. It's all fake. There's not a real world word in there, but it sounds so real. Just listen.
This is what languages sound like to foreigners.
What English sounds like to non-English speakers. Do silly to gimbal clorinder? There's a Terry Hall van.
The Lux does decide the Noldergaard yaps here. And Lang. But is next you taste Denfor or lobster?
What Espanol sounds like.
It's so funny because you're trying to make sense. What is he saying? And it's a bit like the Simoleons, so the Sims, the characters in The Sims speak. It sounds familiar, but it's completely nonsensical. But wait, it gets better. Spanish.
Like to non-Spanish speakers.
Bueno, el ato se rojarril sellos la pumuldad. No, ya habían los centenos más rusículos por dar. El huerpo gusano tiese lo que hicieran con el fugimiento.
What Arabic sounds like to non-Arabic.
That is so good. And this is like South American Spanish. Later on, he does the Spanish. It's good. Arabic. It's amazing.
Speakers.
بريرتو كل خديك لسي خلا يكبر خفكر سنود إلوك في العالم بهنا عيلة واخ نادو فاوض الماس كردوف صباح هجو ملك أشخابيل
وحتي يا دالحس
I mean, this is exactly what my Arabic hairdresser sounds like when they have their conversations while they're cutting my hair. They're always conversing in Arabic, and this is what I hear, and I can't make any sense of it. I don't recognize any words, but it sounds exactly like this.
اسال خبيل سالت هرول
ان شاء الله سلم هند اللي نود بولتنا دي لمجا عالم به دعيله وخنا الماس هذا مثال العيركوس هذا الهد
What British people sound like.
It's so good. Now he does fake British.
To non-English speakers.
Sepult, I have a sort nephron.
Yeah, I loaded to Sandy Brechtor.
Dame folly as they tape, didn't it?
Well, dunny of handforth, bummits the kites entirely.
Bite it up the turner chorist. And the perry.
Begs be the disket on follow day, Yordsmith.
Sepp it did sathem it up froth the son of Tuleidenbra. Oh, Laventry guide through Lopford and Nanterbury.
What French sounds like to non-French speakers.
Oh, this one's good too. He does French. And it's not the kind of the standard Hollywood fake French, but this sounds really like French, even to me. And I know French.
Bah, font pitié à la farnace ludiquement. Oh là là. Vous souviens les temps paralytes, le pamphlet?
Voilà, dit et un sat tricolage à tronesse.
Les billes de fricole, maison triste, du vent s'éternel.
What German sounds like.
The German is the weakest thing. That doesn't convince me.
To non-German speakers.
Trangtun vielichten sitte ich te beffend?
Nein.
Eine stollen schlut, branke lagen beva elend.
Ritz steinagen uben sprache.
Sieben fulz und sinnesbrau.
What Hindi sounds like? To non-
Hindi?
Hindi speakers.
Nikarka dolium basku tema haribari gujja.
That's pretty convincing too.
Jim absolutti di kate.
Vatter mante jupta.
What Italian sounds like to non-Italian speakers.
Oh, this must be good. Italian.
Pecere con denollo, sole sandolino pizzato.
Mia borella, turnero braccio tantomini.
Mamma mia.
Passico fermine, sarissimo, pintorino, fa sedere, ti picciamo.
He even does the, like, the talking with his hands. And you know what? What makes this convincing? It's not just the words. It is the melody. I've always said that language is just, it's not just the pronunciation. It's also the inclination of the phrases, the melody. Like when I do my fake American accent, I have a totally different, like even this what I just said, I have a totally different, that is very American. I mean, I try to emulate what I hear on the radio and on TV. But if you listen to it, if I would do like a fake British accent, I would probably lower my voice a little bit and also slow down. I don't know, I'm a little less inclined to accelerate when I'm trying to speak English, and also the melody and the emphasis of my words completely changes. Like right now, I'm trying to do my Johnny Ives impression, and I know that it's nothing. When you're really from the UK, you will probably think this is rubbish. But to me, it's a totally different mindset even to trying to do this accent. So you see, it's a very, very different. Like when I'm using my American accent, I usually get, there's a lot of up and down in my voice. And I speak like this, and then I go all the way up and I get very excited. I would never do that when I would try to do an English, like a UK accent or a British accent. I would always kind of keep my voice kind of low. This is what I have been taught to use. And it's even the hesitations in the voice get different. French, same thing. Quand je parle français, c'est très différent. Et j'ai une façon de parler qui est vraiment complètement différent du néerlandais. You hear that it's not just the words, it's also the melody. All right, let's listen to a little bit more. This is too funny. This is fake Spanish, Spanish.
Spain Spanish sounds like to non-Spanish people.
Silijoyas, tíos, es lo que tú me brices.
Con pesa cintura que pieces.
Os lo ruego.
Cobios, pieces. Completely nonsense, but so much fun. Oh my gosh. Harry wants to know, you've got Dutch as well. No, he doesn't do Dutch.
Se puede tolper al zárbaro el pojo contra el vaso.
What Japanese sounds like to non-Japanese
this
speakers.
This one's pretty good too.
Otro cotaremas. Kiano mai keda.
Kagai no kirikote. Irisataka wa isketo.
Bira kaitero. Kadai sandare kadai ga.
He also does the voice like you're from the Japanese animated series. Like.
What Portuguese sounds like to non-Portuguese speakers.
Fagor presente, necessita cala na fonte.
Pra caramba. Olha, ressoam as fontes pra
bicho. Brazilian Portuguese.
Curia na beleza, fara.
Tu sou das coisas mais importantes da ida, né?
What Russian sounds like to non-Russian speakers.
Vernakovia, Slotter, Lanushka, Veristroika, Blots.
Erblonovsky, Yakbur, Haslutter, Buski.
You gotta listen to it for yourself. It is genius. Again, this is TikTok stuff. It's repurposed on YouTube, but I originally found this on TikTok. And that's what I love about TikTok. It's such a treasure trove of content. And not all of it is good. And some of it is really silly. But it is so eclectic. And there's so much to enjoy. It's really, really funny. So I am Dutch. And if I speak Dutch, I'll speak a few phrases for those of you that don't believe me. You will also hear that it's very different from the way in which I speak American English. Als ik Nederlands praat, dan heb ik over het algemeen een... ik probeer altijd Nederlands te spreken zoals men het spreekt in het midden van het land. Met een klein beetje... Je kunt, als je uit Nederland komt, dan hoor je dat ik ook uit de buurt van Rotterdam kom. Want mijn R is een beetje anders dan in andere gedeeltes van het Nederlands. This was the Dutch that I speak on TV. So when I'm always trying to do a bit of a blend between the what they speak here in the center of the country where I currently live and what I originally spoke in the area of Rotterdam. But I'm going to do a few more accents in Dutch from different parts. And I'm just going to emulate it. I'm not from those areas, so there is a lot to criticize there. But you will hear that even in Dutch, there are many different... Like, let me do my Flemish accent. Dus als ik nu ga proberen om te praten zoals bijvoorbeeld mijn familie in Antwerpen praat, dat is echt heel anders dan in Nederland. En ze hebben een manier om... Ja, eigenlijk slikken ze eigenlijk wat meer in. Tegelijkertijd is het ook een beetje meer vriendelijk, een meer wat lagere stem dan in Nederlands. Althans, als ik dat spreek. So that was Flemish. Or at least my attempt at Flemish. Then you've got the area where my father was born, which is in the south of the country. It's Limburg. En in Limburg, zeker als je richting Hunsbruck gaat, dan heb je ontzettend veel intonatie in die stem. En het klinkt hier zeer melodieus. Ik kan het niet echt heel erg goed doen, want normaal gesproken praat je daar eigenlijk dialect. Dat kan ik absoluut niet. Maar ik kan dit zo praten mijn neefjes altijd wel een beetje zo. Okay, that was hard because I was just switching from Flemish, which is a little bit similar, so it started to blend over. Then you've got the eastern part of the country, which is also very different. So you've got Twente. And in Twente, it's hard to switch like that. My brain doesn't keep up. In Twente praat ze meer zoals dit. En hebben ze meer een hele andere intonatie. En het is meer nasaal. So they speak more through the nose. And the T's are very, like, there's a lot of breath in there. And then you've got, for instance, Rotterdam. Rotterdam almost sounds like English. So in Rotterdam praat ze echt zo, met zo R achter in de stem. En ook altijd een beetje meer, het is meer vanuit de keel gesproken. En ja, kijk, ik begin automatisch al een klein beetje dat Engels erin te verwerken. Of course, what makes it very different from English is the guttural G, which is very, like, raspy in Dutch. It's almost like Arabic or Klingon. Grote grutte. That was something. Grote grutte. Amsterdam, also very peculiar, recognizable accent. Again, I can just do the token Amsterdam. Maar als ik in Amsterdam praat, nou dan praat ik echt... Nee, sorry, I can't do it anymore. I'm trying to switch too much. But anyway, Amsterdam is also very peculiar. And that's just in this one country. Anyway. That was just an aside, actually. It has nothing to do with the rest of what I wanted to talk about. But this is... I love languages. I love... And I take particular pride in trying to get as close as possible. And there's so many languages that I would love to learn, but I just don't have the time. That's why eternity... I'm not going to be bored in heaven. Because there's always something to learn. Provided that we even have languages there. But... Oh, we need to talk about Lego. Lego has now launched its biggest set ever, bigger even than the Imperial Star Destroyer or the Millennium Falcon. This new set is a miniature version of the Lego Colosseum, which I rode my bike alongside that building for 2 years, every single morning, every single evening. It's one of the... When I think of Rome, I think of the Colosseum. And there were already some mock versions of the Colosseum built by fans, very talented ones. But now Lego has made its own version, and it looks spectacular. It must be a pain to build, though, because they only use three colors, because the entire building, of course, is kind of like beige and brown. So I think it's beige, brown, and gray, and that's all they use. But the detail of this model is out of this world. What is funny, of course, is that the Colosseum that we are so familiar with is nothing like the Colosseum like it looked in Roman times, where the entire outside of the building was covered in marble. And it, of course, it was completely round, circular. And actually, I like the current version of the Colosseum, stripped from all its marble, which is reused and in many churches, including the St. Peter's Basilica. I like the current version much, much better. I like that brown color, and it's a very distinctive form. But hats off to the Lego builders that were able to create something that looks so realistic. And for some reason, the kind of crumbled version of the Colosseum that we know nowadays is so close to... works really well with Lego blocks, because the entire thing is built with blocks. So it is very expensive, though. It's not as even though it has more elements than any other Lego set, it is a lot cheaper than the Imperial Star Destroyer and the Millennium Falcon. This is about 500 something, which is still pretty expensive for a Lego set. It's like twice the price that you'd pay for the Hogwarts Castle, which was already a massive set. And I'm not sure if it's fun to build, because it's a lot of it is about the details. And of course, there's not much. What you see is what you get. What I like about the Millennium Falcon is that there are so many different parts of the thing. And even better, the Hogwarts Castle, because you're building real, you know, sets and rooms and hallways, and every part of that build had a story connected to it. So that must be my all-time favorite Lego set so far. So I'm not sure if I'm going to get the Colosseum. On the other hand, it is such a showcase of what you can do with Lego, and it's definitely, Lego is trying more and more to aim for the grown-up market, and to step away from just selling to kids. And I've heard that during these COVID times, puzzles are back. I never really cared for puzzles, but apparently they're sold out everywhere. And I think that Lego also does really, really well in these times where people are just locked up and have a lot of time to spend at home. And, well, I think these sets are showing that they are trying to capitalize on that and hopefully becoming part of what people do with their spare time. And, well, I can speak from experience that building Lego, there's something super satisfying about that. And it's if you build together with other people, so it can also be very social. Or if you stream it and talk to the chat room, which hopefully I will be able to do in the future again. So, Lego Colosseum looks like actually a completely over the top Christmas gift, but I bet you there are people that will that will gift that to themselves. All right, I need to talk about comic books. Do I have a jingle for that? I hope so. I think so. Yes, here we are.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
All right, so another thing that I love about my new iPad is reading comic books. And you know that I've got this Marvel Unlimited subscription, which is I don't know why I paid for that. I think there was like an offer earlier this year, and I was like, I'm going to get this new iPad anyway. So one of the reasons that I stopped my subscription was, A, it was very expensive. B, it was so difficult to read on a small screen. But I have to say that this iPad really delivers and does what I hoped it would do, and making reading comics so much of a joy. It's so pleasant to read it on a big screen. And I discovered a series that I didn't know existed, but which is so cool. It's called Star Wars Infinities. And the concept, this is old. This is, I think, from the Dark Horse times. Maybe even before that. But the concept of this is, what would the story be if things had gone differently? I think Marvel is also exploring this in an upcoming TV show, probably also postponed to 2021 or 22. But what if Luke Skywalker had missed the exhaust port on the Death Star? And the Empire would have won. What would have happened? And this series, Star Wars Infinities, A New Hope, explores exactly that and starts with Luke Skywalker missing the exhaust port and the Death Star does not blow up. And within the span of two issues, it is a totally different story. And it is so well done. And I really like the style of this comic because it still feels very cinematic. They reuse that a lot of the dialogue, but it's totally different. I'm going to give you one small spoiler, which is so awesome and at the same time so frightening. Leia turns to the dark side. She's captured, of course, by Tarkin and Darth Vader, and then the Emperor is making sure that she turns to the dark side. And even Luke Skywalker almost turns to the dark side because he's so mad at the Empire when he misses the Death Star and it does not explode that he kills a bunch of TIE fighters out of sheer rage, and he feels the attraction of the dark side and his anger and frustration. And then he hears the voice of Ben who says, "Oh, calm down. That is the dark side. Don't give in." And then he goes to Dagobah, but he doesn't go there by himself. Han and Chewie take him in the Millennium Falcon, and then his training is different too, and he has to go into the dark cave twice to face his greatest fears. And there are some twists and turns in this story that are so good, and I love the concept of this. So both the concept and the execution makes me long for if they ever do a reboot of Star Wars, of the original stories, do this. This is what I want to see. This is, I think, where the story potential is and where you could do a reboot without upsetting the fans, because it will basically be an alternate timeline. And you could recast everyone. I don't care, but you could. This is so interesting. It's similar to, remember that a while ago I was talking about something I read on Comixology, and it was a Star Trek series where they took the original stories from the original series, but in the comic it was the new actors portraying them, and the stories were all twisted. They were all like, it's the same but it's not the same, and it just kept me on the edge of my seat. I was like, wow, this is so cool. Why don't we do reboots like that instead of just making a copy like what they did with the live-action versions of The Lion King, where you're just watching the exact same story with CGI instead of hand-drawn animation? It's good, but it's not adding anything. Whereas this takes something and then reboots it and shifts it. And it's a little bit what Once Upon a Time did to fairy tales. I love that they would take fairy tales and explore. Well, what if Star Wars Infinities? Highly recommend it. Had a great time reading that. And I want to see more. I want to see now a what if version of the sequels. What if Rian Johnson would have not directed The Last Jedi? What if we would take Colin Trevorrow's version of the third movie and turn that into a comic book? I think there is a market for that. I would definitely read it. So maybe I'm not the only one. Hey, that's it for this week's episode of Father Roderick to the Max. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a patron and being a supporter, and hope you enjoyed it. And I will see you next week. Take care and God bless.